This is the LarryInFishers.com podcast. I'm Larry Landon. My guest today is Johanna Kitchell. Johanna is the orchestra director at Riverside Junior High School and Riverside Intermediate School. She is also the Hamilton Southeastern School District Teacher of the Year for the 2023-2024 school year. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
You know, I must tell you that I do a lot of podcasts during the year and interview a lot of people locally. My favorite podcast every year is with the teacher of the year, and I've had librarians and elementary school teachers. The first music teacher I've had a chance to talk to in terms of being the teacher of the year. Just so people know, you received your bachelor and master's degree from Butler University. You're also the director of the Indianapolis Youth Orchestra Program's Concert Orchestra.
Yep.
You've guest lectured at a number of universities, Butler, Indiana, Ball State, also Baldwin-Wallace Conservatory. And I looked at your background, and I would be going on for several minutes. You are
sure.
A very busy lady, and obviously won many awards as well for the work that you have done, so I can see how you were chosen for Teacher of the Year. But I did find your profile on Pinterest.
Oh, okay.
And you describe yourself as, in this order, teacher, runner, cellist, Butler grad, sports fan, athlete, brew enthusiast, New Yorker,
yeah.
Broadway obsessed, and a dog owner.
Ooh, okay.
That's a lot.
Those, I think all of those would still be true. Dog owner would have to go to dog lover now, only because we're not currently a dog owning family, but we are a dog loving family. But I'm going to stand behind the rest of those.
Okay. Well, you mentioned teacher first, so
yes.
I assume that is your first love. But I want to delve into something else you mentioned in that Pinterest background. You say you're Broadway obsessed. So how often do you visit Broadway?
So I grew up in New York, not New York City, but I also went to like a performing arts camp for years. And I grew up in a family that liked theater. My sister is a Broadway obsessed person as well and actually worked in the theater world in New York City for a long time. And so I've spent a lot of time in New York City going to shows. I saw my first off-Broadway production when I was in elementary school, my first Broadway production in middle school, and I don't think I could count the number of Broadway shows that I have seen now.
Then I have a very tough question for you.
Okay.
If you've seen that many shows, of all the, I would stick to musicals since you're a musical teacher, a music teacher. What are some of your favorite stage musicals that you've seen over the years?
Sure. I've also been really fortunate to get some experiences that not everybody gets to have, where I've been able to see productions with the original cast, you know, things like that. So I saw Spring Awakening way back when, which is early Lea Michele and Jonathan Groff, and I got to see them with the original cast and John Gallagher Jr. I got to see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Norbert Leo Butz and Sherry Renee Scott. Norbert Leo Butz is one of my all-time favorites. A couple of my students know, I was once serenaded. This was not a Broadway concert or Broadway show, but this was actually at a concert. I was once serenaded by Jeremy Jordan.
Oh my gosh.
He actually held my hand and sang one of the songs from Bonnie and Clyde. So that was very cool. And I've seen the original cast of Hamilton, which is a huge thing that I'm really fortunate to see. I'll have to throw Sweeney Todd, Sondheim Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, amongst my favorite productions. I've seen it twice with two different productions on Broadway. And then I'll probably throw in one more. I'll say two more. Okay. The Last 5 Years, which is a small musical by an amazing composer named Jason Robert Brown. And Once on This Island, which is a Stephen Schwartz musical. And they recently did a revival of it. So
well, that's quite a long list. So you've seen a lot of theater, a lot of musical
yes.
theater, and one would understand why with the involvement you have in this job and in music in general. I was there, it was almost a year ago, when you were announced as the Teacher of the Year. Explain your emotions when that was announced.
So I had actually made a wager with one of my colleagues that I was not the Teacher of the Year. And so when I was announced as the junior high finalist, I kind of like jokingly dropped my head almost like in embarrassment because I was like, well, I lost the wager because he had wagered that I would be the junior high like finalist the way we do it. And really it's just, it's humbling. And if you were there, you heard me say, It's really easy to work hard and do great things when you're surrounded by people who work hard and do great things. And so to be recognized in such a way is really humbling, because I work in a building and I work in a district where everybody is working hard and doing great things. And that's been true my whole time here. I don't know if it's something you'll mention later. I've spent my entire teaching career here in HSE. I started here as a 21-year-old fresh out of college teacher, and this is year 16. And so I have seen in so many different ways with different teachers, different admin, different, you know, doesn't matter who is here. The people here in this district are working hard and doing great things. And so my emotions were just, okay, but there's so many other people doing this too. Why me? And I mean, happiness, sure. And pride. I'm really proud of the program that I've built here at Riverside, the orchestra program. And I'm really proud of the work that I do and the way that my students play. And more importantly, the way that they leave this program loving playing and loving music. But really more just humbled. We don't ask for that when we go into teaching. We don't ask to be recognized. We just like to do what we like to do.
16 years and one job in education is a long time. I'm sure you've had opportunities to go elsewhere. What's kept you? You sort of alluded to that already.
Yeah, I just can't imagine being anywhere else. I'm sure everybody could say the grass is greener somewhere else, or the grass is greener here or there or anywhere. But I have built this program. I didn't start it. I was not the first teacher at Riverside when it opened. I came in its third year as a building here. And when I started, there were 73 students. They were wonderful. And now I'm at 200 and almost 50 students. And I'm really proud of what we've built here. And I have incredibly supportive administrators, top to bottom, and in both of the buildings in which I teach. And that makes a huge difference. I have great music colleagues, both in the building and then the other orchestra colleagues around this district. And I can't imagine, I could maybe see that the grass looks green over there, but I can't imagine that it really is any better. So.
Well, Riverside, most of us think of it as one building, mm-hmm. and two schools, and that's really what you say, two buildings. Mm-hmm. It is connected buildings, and you do teach classes to both intermediate mm-hmm. and junior high students.
So the way we work, band and orchestra start in sixth grade. So sixth grade is technically our intermediate building. So I teach one class of orchestra. That's all of our beginners. It's currently 106 kids in orchestra, and I teach all of them in one beginning class, and then they move to the other end of the building to the junior high side. But as much as it looks like one giant building, we function completely separately. So two sets of admin, two bell schedules, the whole thing.
Well, you've already talked about this a little. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about the orchestra program here in this building that you've been involved with for 16 years.
Yeah. So like I was just saying, we start in sixth grade, and nearly every sixth grader is a beginner. So they learn the fundamentals through me. I also bring in adjunct teachers to help us break up into smaller groups by instruments so that they're getting that more specialized and individualized instruction. And then they move over to the junior high at the end of sixth grade. Like I said, this year there's 106. I've had as many as 135 in that beginning group. And then in seventh and eighth grade, we have currently, I have three. Next year, it looks like I might have four mixed grade ensembles. So those are smaller orchestras. They're usually between 30 and 40 some odd students, where it's all the instruments together. And those have both seventh and eighth graders in them. We also have a beginning orchestra for junior high students. If they did not start in sixth grade for any other reason, they can start with me in seventh and eighth grade again. I also teach a general music class, which is like a music appreciation. We do the history of American popular music. So we actually go through blues and jazz and rock and roll, hip hop, rap, pop, country music, things like that.
That's a wide variety of music there.
Yes.
To look at all of that. I mean, in college, you probably have just a class on jazz, or you're bringing it all in pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's a wide, thin look. So not a lot of deep dives in that, but I try and show the students in that general music class how the music they listen to today didn't just pop out of nowhere, that it's actually been built upon generations of artists who come before. So we try and look at the connections between, for instance, scat singing in jazz and a hip hop or rap artist going like, yeah, what? Because there's a relation there.
Yeah, I had a chance to see Ella Fitzgerald years ago, and she did the way she did the scat was just amazing. Sure. And that is, you can, I never thought about that, but you could say the origins of hip hop actually started back as far as her, her career. I was just curious, now once these students get through the junior high program, I know you may not have statistics on this, but based on what you know, how many of your students continue with music to the high school?
So I send most of the students to Fishers High School, but we do send at Riverside some students to HSE. I last counted, at one of the concerts I counted, and I think from Riverside alone, there was something like 130 or 140-ish former Riverside students still playing at the high school. So that's 4 years worth of students instead of three. And then HSE, it's just a smaller number that I send over there, but I think I have about 15 or 20 former Riversiders there. So it's a pretty high retention. I don't know the percentage, but there are a lot of students who continue on and are doing amazing things at both high schools.
I was going to say, there are probably a number of those people that marching in the Thanksgiving Day parade that were your students.
Those would have been band students, so it's because we're more marching band. I did have a few students, I believe, who were in guard that marched in the parade, who they either were in orchestra in junior high and still are in orchestra in the high school, or even if they've stopped orchestra, they're doing guard, but they're still involved in the musical arts in some way. But there were a lot of Riverside band students and former Riverside students who marched.
I want to bring something up that I always thought was fascinating. I looked back and found, there are probably a lot of these, but I found a 2019 study. It was published in the Journal of Educational Psychology. It sounds very official. It says high schoolers who take music courses score significantly better on exams and certain other subjects, including math and science, the STEM disciplines. They do better than their non-musical peers. Now, you've taught music, obviously, for many years. You're in the 16th year. Why do you believe that's the case?
So there's a couple different things. One of the biggest things is that while we think about arts as being this certain subset of students, to perform a musical instrument is going to involve both sides of your brain. You're going to have right brain functioning and left brain functioning. And anytime, and I hope I don't get this wrong, so I hope you don't get comments from actual scientists, I'm sorry. Anytime you are doing things that involve those right brain and left brain things, you're sending the signals across, and it's been a long day at school, and I cannot remember the bridge between them. But anytime you get to go between them, you're strengthening that connection. And so when you're performing a musical instrument or when you're singing any sort of musical activity and you're involving both your right and left brain, you're strengthening that bridge. So if you're strengthening the bridge, you're increasing your brain's cognitive function. And I think that there is something to be said there. I think also a lot of our students who are performing, they're learning critical thinking skills. They're learning studying and practice skills, because to go sit and practice an instrument takes a lot of effort and takes a lot of learning and control and self-discipline. And so those students who are learning to do that with an instrument, or again, singing is, your voice is an instrument, so I'm considering choir and things in that as well. You're learning the same skills that you need to go study for any of your standardized testing, your math, your science, things like that, your English. You're learning those same skills. I think a lot of our students who are choosing to pursue musical paths also are students who, because we are elective classes, you have to choose to be in our class. So these are students who are choosing more. And so those are students who are willing to take on the more. They understand that, like, putting in that effort and things like that. So I think you're going to find a lot of students who are studying music in some way or another are also just naturally hardworking human beings. And, you know, so many of our students are. I mean, we have great students, again, across the district. And so those students, they're already naturally hardworking. They're willing to do that more. And so you see that in their grades and tests and things like that.
You know, I've asked past teachers of the year about state testing. Well, there's no state test for music.
No, thankfully.
And you're happy about that, I'm sure. But the data that I just cited and what you just talked about does indicate that, you know, students studying music score higher in other academic subjects. So I think based on that, if you're a parent, I would think you'd encourage, you know, I never had a musical background. Nobody in my family was involved in music, and so I never really had an interest in being a musician. But I would think that if I were a parent, I'd say, you know, maybe I would encourage my child to pursue at least a little music education.
Sure. I mean, there's certainly benefits. I think you could also potentially argue, and I had a professor who did during my grad program, that you also, the pursuit of music shouldn't specifically be for the sake of the perceived academic goals that it's going to accomplish, but that music itself is just a joyful experience. The ability to create, to express yourself through music, to be part of, I mean, ensembles are teams. We function as a team in my class on a daily basis, to learn to work as a team, to achieve as a team. My students often want to just come be in my room, and we find this so much at the high schools. They want to just like live in the music wing. And so there is something to be said about encouraging our students to pursue music simply because it is a wonderful outlet and it's a wonderful way for them to express emotions, to process things, to be in a very different type of academic setting. What we do here is academic, and the kids are learning and they're growing, but it's in a very different way. And I think that there's value in that. So there's a little bit of also just the sort of music for music's sake. And I hope that many families consider encouraging their students to participate in music, if nothing else, just for the music for music's sake, because it's joyful.
Joyful is a good word to use, I would think, yes. And I think you have to have some interest in
it,
obviously.
Well, yes, certainly.
Yeah, and if you have no interest, okay. But it's hard to find anybody who has no interest, if it's a double negative. It's hard to find somebody with no interest in music, in my experience. I know there are school districts in Indiana and nationwide who are just unable to find the funding to support this kind of music education and fund it sufficiently. And, you know, the data that I mentioned before should persuade school boards and administrators to look in supporting music. I would think as a music educator and knowing others, you know, in Indiana and elsewhere, that I'm sure you make your case that music programs have their value in many other ways, not just learning the music.
Yeah, I mean, it would be ideal in any music professional organization. There are several. There are broad general professional organizations, and there are content-specific, like string teacher ones, band teacher ones. You know, I'm sure if you were to look at their stated goals, it's to have music programs available in every school. There are state and national standards that include music should be available to all students, that it's part of a well-rounded curriculum. You know, it's always frustrating and disappointing to hear when there aren't, especially at the secondary level. You know, you often hear, okay, we have elementary school K through 5 general music, but then as you start getting into the secondary 6 through 12 level, the options dwindle. And I wish that we could show every school district and get them on board on understanding on why it's such a valuable thing to have, and not just one outlet, not just one option, but a broad swath the way that we are so fortunate to have here in HSE schools. We have one of the other general music teachers, one of our band directors, he teaches guitar in his general music class, and I'm doing mine. And at the high school, there's piano and keyboarding classes, and there's so many options that we provide here, and it would be great to see that replicated at every school everywhere. And I think a lot of our students everywhere would be a lot happier and finding that, again, that outlet, that creative passion, if those opportunities were provided to them.
I think we need to emphasize this, that here at HSE Schools, you do have support for your music programs.
Oh, incredible support. Again, I've been here for 16 years, so I've seen lots of different admin at all different levels of admin. And one of the biggest consistencies has been the support for the performing arts, the visual and the performing arts, up and down year after year. And we are all very grateful for it, and it shows by the numbers of students we have. It is not just my program that's over 200. All of our junior high programs are right at or over that 200, just in orchestra alone, and band and choir, and then all the high school numbers. And we show that those students have this passion and have this desire, and it's really wonderful that we're offering those classes and those outlets for the students.
It's kind of a side note, but you know, I've lived here since 1991, but you were teaching here during the big explosion of students.
I got in just as it was going. I started here, and we had just around 16,000 some odd students. So I'd missed that first big boom of numbers, if you will, but I have seen us add more schools, certainly expand schools, and seen this other big, you know, I started here in 2008, so anything since 08 I've seen.
And the expansion has worked fine for your program.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thrilled to have as many students as want to participate. We will find a spot for them and instrument for them.
Yes, I'm sure you will. As Teacher of the Year, you would interact obviously with many other teachers in the district in that role. Many different types of teachers, different grade levels and disciplines at the higher levels. Based on just what you have seen and heard, I just want you to say this from your own experience. How would you describe the morale of the teaching staff throughout HSE?
I think, so one of the wonderful things that we are invited to do as Teacher of the Year is be involved with HSEF, our School Education Foundation, and we get to be involved in the grants. And that has been such an enlightening and really rewarding part because, you know, it is a big school district, as we've been talking about. And while I do know some people in different buildings and such, we get so busy in our own buildings, I haven't necessarily gotten to get out to every building as much as you would love to. And as I don't, I have a 2.5-year-old, so I don't have any school age children in our school district right now either. But the grants was such this rewarding and enlightening experience because we're seeing these teachers who are requesting funds for these incredible projects. And there's admin statements on why this teacher is incredible and why this project is really valuable and why it should be funded. And so that has been a really great way to kind of see like, oh my gosh, like teachers are doing great things and they're so passionate about serving the schools and serving the students and doing great things. So, you know, I think as we're sitting here on a very gray day, I think there are teachers who are just day in, day out passionate about doing the best that they can and doing everything they can to provide wonderful experiences for the students on a day in and day out basis. And so, you know, if that speaks to morale, like if the grant applications, I think, and Justin Hernize, the executive director, can correct me, I think we had the most applications ever this year. So if that's speaking to our morale, like there's the record number of teachers just for this one thing, but who are wanting to fund these amazing projects, then we're doing pretty all right here.
Yeah, somebody who looks at all of those applications, you do have a good eye into what's happening.
Yeah.
I know that's that foundation grant program's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. And when you see that and you're helping to judge that.
It's just so joyful. Yeah. I come back to that, but it's just so thrilling to see these teachers' projects get funded and the things that they get to do with their students through them.
I think you've already addressed this, but I may want to ask you to expand a little bit because HSE, you know, as somebody who covers the school corporation, I see things at a very high level. I get into buildings when I can, when I'm invited, but I've seen a lot of changes at the top in the last year and a half. We have a lot of new school board members. We have a change in superintendent in the last year and a half. Many central office administrators have changed. I guess the question I would ask you is that something teachers feel in their buildings and classrooms, or is that something that really does not impact the teacher at the classroom building level?
So that's a great question. I think it depends on how the teacher chooses to take that information. And I think it is very similar to a lot of other things on how much do you pay attention to one specific part of what you do versus doing your job without needing to pay attention to that specific part. On a granular level, what we do in our buildings and what we do in our classrooms, there's so many things going on that we can kind of keep going the way we're going and do the things we want to do with our students and do the things we have to and need to and hope to do with our students. And the changes that happen elsewhere may or may not change that granular classroom level. Sometimes they do. And we have wonderful like building level admin who help us filter that information. What do we need to know? What are we going, you know, what are the changes that are happening? And then there are some teachers who choose to pay extra levels of attention to what's going on at that macro district level. And it may or may not affect them more. But I think the biggest thing that I've seen is that every admin that I've worked under and worked with and all through all of the changes, we are still a large number of teachers and building level admin truly trying to provide the best opportunities for our students. And that can be done on a daily basis and at that granular level. And we'll figure out the rest. You know, we'll kind of take the rest as it comes, whether it's good and there's been many, many of it, or things that we have to work through as a group of adults. And that's fine. That's any job, and that's any group of adults working together towards common goals, which I do deeply feel like we've always had, and any school district should have, and I think HSE does have, which is the common goal of supporting and educating our students in the best way we know how. And so I think it varies teacher to teacher and building to building, but I truly think that everything is always just, how can we best serve these students? How can we help the kids in our room and the kids in our buildings be the best kids that they can be?
I have several teachers in my family. I've been close to teachers in the past. And I have this question for you because I think this is what I hear from people in the teaching profession, why they got into it and why they have stayed in it. You don't have to choose just one, but maybe a handful of instances where you've had a student come back and say, you know, Mrs. Kitchell, you really made a difference. Can you tell me a story or maybe a few where that's really, it really comes to mind and it really did touch you?
There are a few. And it's hard because it feels like you're patting yourself on the back for a job well done. And I'm not good at that.
You shouldn't feel bad about that.
I'm not good at that. I do have a few students who have gone on in music, whether music or music education at the collegiate level. And that is really rewarding to see that I helped ignite a passion. Many of them, they started their instrument in sixth grade and now they're studying at the collegiate level. And I ignited this little passion that has developed into something so big. And I mean, let's be honest, that's why I became a teacher. I had amazing teachers who ignited this passion in me. So that's been really rewarding. And then I've had a few students just here or there were like, so my first eighth graders are turning 30 this year. So, you know, you figure they're 14, add 16 years, they're turning 30. They're grownups and adults, and many of them are married and have families of their own. And I've run into a few, like, just out and about in the community, and to have them, like, come up to me and say, like, oh my gosh, you know, whether it was before I was married and it was Miss Marvin or Mrs. Kitchell, like, it's so amazing to see you. Like, I still remember, I'm sure you don't remember who I am, but I remember being in your orchestra class. That's been really special. Just those little moments. It doesn't have to be a big thing, but the little moment, yeah, where I see a person or I run into somebody in the community and they're like, oh my gosh, my daughter had you and you probably don't remember. Recently, another actually HSEF story, I was at game day and I was introduced by one of the board members. I was speaking as teacher of the year and I was introduced by one of the board members and I had had both of his daughters and he had asked his daughters, you know, what did you think when you had Mrs. Kitchell as a teacher? And they wrote the sweetest like little messages to be read. And this board member read them out loud. Shout out to the Emerson family. And that was really touching and moving that, first of all, the father, the board member thought to ask his daughters, like, tell me a little bit about what, you know, your experience is in orchestra. And that both girls wrote such sweet messages. And so really it's just those little things, seeing kids as they've grown up and come back or running into them and having them be like, oh, I had so much fun in your class or I learned something or I still play my violin occasionally. That's what's really cool.
You know, I have to say one thing, you said something about practicing and how you have to get into that practice. There are maybe some people listening who remember the comedian Jack Benny from years ago.
Okay.
And he loved playing the violin. And once he was asked, he didn't play it very well. And he knew it was part of the joke. Although he loved playing the violin, he knew he wasn't good at it. So somebody asked him once, you don't have to practice, do you? He goes, oh, yeah. He says, you have to practice just to play badly.
Yes. there was, I hope I get this right. I think it was maybe either Pavlikas Halls or Rostropovich, famous cellist.
Yes.
And he was asked, I forget who it was, and it was, you know, you're older now and you've been playing professionally. Why do you keep practicing? And his response was like, because I think I'm finally making progress. you know,
Rostropovich is known for saying things like that.
It was probably him. Yeah. No, I mean, it's an incredible life skill. I have actually given whole conversations about and like lectures about teaching kids to practice. It's one of my big tenets in how I teach. But it is an incredible life skill to teach somebody, because practicing requires you to break down the element into small pieces and do things in a very different way. There's a difference between practicing and playing. You don't just look at the top of the page and run through it to the bottom of the page. That's playing. That'd be like if you showed up to basketball practice and all you did was play 3-on-3. That's playing a game. You didn't practice. But showing kids how to break it down into little pieces, how to repeat, like go through repetition, how to isolate challenging spots, how to work through a sticky situation, how to slow it down, speed it up, play it in a different, do it in a different way. All these different things that teach you how to learn this passage are also things that are going to be applicable later in life. How do I work through this problem, whether it's a math problem or a people problem or a job problem? How do I don't understand what's happening here. How do I break it down into smaller segments? That's at basketball practice. That's doing drills. That's shooting free throws. That's just passing the ball back and forth. That's just dribbling. And that's practice. And so teaching students how to practice versus how to play is a really important part of learning an instrument, but it has so much transferable knowledge.
We've all learned a lot about music education here. I've asked all the questions I have. Do you have anything you would like to add before we wrap this up?
No, I really don't. It's not a hyperbole. It's not overstating things to say. Like, I'm really proud to work at Riverside and work in HSC schools and really glad to have those opportunities. I always give a shout out to my current administration. So I'm really grateful to have Rob Husing and Jamie Andrews and Dana Kaminsky and Brent Farrell. Those are all four at both buildings at the helm here. Their support of the arts and performing arts specifically is unmatched. And I'm grateful to be able to work under them because I get to do what I'm doing. And I know that they support it. So.
Yeah, building principals and vice principals are so key, aren't they?
They really are.
The people you see every day as a teacher. Guest today, Johanna Kitchell. She's in her last few weeks of being the teacher of the year in this school year. You'll be handing that mantle off to somebody else at the end of May, and you will proudly do it. And I thank you so much for your time. It's been a joy talking to you.
Thanks so much. Great to meet you.